I'm very happy to have with me today one of the leading Christians who is opposed to the present policy of so many of the evangelical churches in support of Israel. The gentleman's name is Ted Pike, and he also is the person in charge of truthtellers.org, and he really does tell the truth. He's had a great video called The Other Israel, a great book called Israel, Our Duty, Our Dilemma. He has written a number of books. In fact, we'll ask him about his books and his ideas. And he also has been one of the most courageous fighters against the so-called hate crime legislation that's been proposed in the United States Senate, the United States Congress, that are acts that absolutely oppose principles of free speech, free thought, free association, the fundamental and the basic freedoms of the United States of America. He's been perhaps one of the leading voices in opposition to that. Ted, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, David.
It's great to be with you, and I've been following your work for so many years. Why don't we start off? I'd like to get into some of your opinions about Israel and this whole pro-Zionist element that we have in evangelical circles today, or at least many evangelical circles, not all. But let's start off with the hate crimes legislation, because this has been a major focus of yours over the last few years. Tell us what it's all about and where we stand in terms of the progress of these very anti-American statutes.
Well, I came out with my book, Israel, Our Duty, Our Dilemma, in 1984, and I really wasn't aware of the threat of hate crimes legislation so much at that time. But about 1987 or 98, Trish Katzen, who used to work for the old Spotlight newspaper, at my request, sent me quite a packet of information about everything that was happening, not only in the United States, but especially in Canada, under the so-called hate crimes legislation there. And I began to be aware that the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League of the Maybarif, was actively working behind the scenes, lobbying Congress, working in Canada to pass hate crimes legislation. And here in the United States, well, maybe I better start with Canada first. In 1971, after about 10 years of intense lobbying of Parliament, the northern branches of ADL, which is ADL, excuse me, B'nai B'rith Canada and the Canadian Jewish Congress, they finally persuaded Parliament to pass what is now known as the Human Rights Act of Canada. And in a nutshell, what this legislation involves is a stiff fines, even possible imprisonment for anyone who criticizes or holds up to public contempt members of specially protected classes, especially homosexuals, Jews, etc. And there's been a sorry record now since 1971 of not only originally Holocaust revisionists and racialists and so on being indicted and convicted under this legislation, but now they're really turning toward the Christians, turning against the Christians in Canada. And we've had a number of indictments and convictions of Christians and pastors, church organizations in Canada. And they're even going now after the ministers in Canada. Stephen Boysen is an outstanding evangelical pastor in Canada who was recently, just this last month, convicted of the hate crime of criticizing homosexuality. And I guess he has... I think he has at least a $5,000 fine. He has to apologize, make a public apology, formal apology to the homosexual who brought the case against him. But here in the United States, I was very, very aware after Trish gave me this packet of exactly what was happening in Canada. I got in touch with Paul Fromm, and he informed me a great deal more, gave me some details of the history and so on. But around 1990, I was aware that the ADL was attempting to basically take over law enforcement in the United States, all the way from the Justice Department, the FBI, and down to every, literally every police precinct in America. And under their Hate Crime Statistic Act of 1990, the ADL, which is an adjunct of a religious organization, was given the power to mix the synagogue in said state and have the blessings of the federal government to educate all law enforcement from the top to the bottom concerning their twisted definitions of hate and hate crime and bias and things like that. And so this led to finally a video in 2001 entitled Hate Laws Making Criminals of Christians, in which we went, took a film crew to B.C., to Vancouver, and documented what was happening there in Canada. And basically, since then, I have been working very, very actively on the federal level, especially to combat and publicize the very dangerous federal hate crimes bill, which the ADL repeatedly has introduced since 1998. But we've been able to defeat it roundly a full five times. And so the ADL is very frustrated that the federal hate crimes bill, an imitation of the Canadian hate bill, has never materialized.
Well, you know, it's interesting, too, that we know some of the same people over the years. Trish Katzen, very fine lady who worked for the Spotlight. She came down to Louisiana, actually, and worked for me for a while after my election to the House of Representatives. And she's a very fine person, and I'm really glad that she got you kind of started on this issue, because you've done a great job with it. And is it true in Canada, for instance, basically someone can be prosecuted, fined, even put in prison for simply quoting the scriptures?
Well, absolutely. You see, under Section 319 and also 13A of the Canadian Human Rights Act, if you make any statement, not only that's critical of a member of a federally protected class, but also if it's likely, quote-unquote likely, to cause hatred or contempt of those people, then you are a hate criminal. And in their hate crimes tribunals in Canada, they have one hearings officer, no judge and jury, and furthermore, they will not even allow the truth to be admitted as evidence in that court, that kangaroo court. The only thing that matters is whether the feelings of a member of one of these protected classes has been hurt. And if you have quoted Leviticus against homosexuality, if you have quoted the Talmud against Jewish anti-Christianity or whatever, then you are a hate criminal, and the usual bottom line fine is about $5,000, and then, of course, you have to pay attorney's fees. And if you repeat the offense, then you are in contempt of court, which means basically once you've run afoul of the hate crimes tribunal system, you have a gag order on your mouth for the rest of your life. Anytime you repeat that offense of speaking from the pulpit or from the microphone in criticism of these groups, then you'll be hauled back into a prison term.
In other words, if you criticize Jewish supremacism, Jewish extremism, you know, we always hear about Muslim extremism, we always hear about fundamentalist Christian extremism, we hear about white extremism. But if you criticize Jewish extremism and the Jewish extremist state of Israel, the supremacist state of Israel, where in fact Jews are not even allowed to legally marry non-Jews, and Jews of the Kohanim, or the priest class, can't even marry Jews who are practicing Jews of the Jewish faith who have one drop of Gentile blood. You can't even criticize. If you criticize Jewish extremism and Jewish racism, then you also are up for a possible prosecution.
Yes, you are. But if you criticize Christianity, I don't know of anyone who's ever been arrested, indicted for trashing Christianity in the most abusive terms, because obviously that would implicate a great many Jewish radicals, Jewish activists, and so on, including Abraham Foxman. Incidentally, these hate crimes tribunals do go after those who criticize Islam. In fact, you may have heard just in this last week or two that a Muslim made a complaint against Maclean's magazine, which is a huge institution in Canada, for allowing Mark Stein, who's an award-winning writer and Jewish, I believe, to make disparaging remarks against Islam. And for the first time, this is very interesting, there's been such a brouhaha up there in Canada now as a result of the controversy of having some pretty reputable people going before the hate crimes docket, that for the first time since 1971, the hate crimes tribunal had to back down and to acquit McLean magazine of the hate crime of allowing Mark Stein to speak his mind. Mark Stein is still under indictment, but one of the hopeful signs is that, you see, what we're doing at truthtellers.org is we have the preeminent hate crimes, hate law website in the world. And you go to, for example, you Google under hate laws, and you'll get, first of all, you get the ADL there as the world's authority and the architect of hate crimes legislation. But number two is truthtellers.org. And my video, Hate Laws Making Christians Criminals of Christians, is right there. People can link to that immediately and watch that video. And many thousands are doing that. And many of those thousands who are watching our videos and reading our literature, our postings at truthtellers.org, are foreign peoples and those who are laboring under these hate crimes laws. And I believe many, many Canadians are now avidly listening to what we have to say.
Well, Ted, I tell you that I know I can recommend to every one of our listeners, both in America and around the world, to go to Truth Tellers. That's truthtellers.org, and watch that video and read your material. Get in your mailing list. You can also order these materials through davidduke.com, and because your material is fantastic, and it's so important. I mean, people just don't realize that in Canada or these other, even in Europe and other countries, one person put it very well at our last national conference. And by the way, our Euro organization is going to have another world conference in the United States on November 7 and 8 of this year. And but it's so important to understand. One of our good guests from Sweden put it this way. He said it kind of funnily, in a funny way. He said that in Sweden, you know, you can say that all whites are dumb, but you can't say all Jews are dumb, or you can't say all blacks are dumb. You can say white people are oppressive, but you can't say the other. You can criticize you can criticize Christianity all day long, up and down, but you can't criticize the extreme aspects of Judaism. So it's really kind of interesting that our own heritage, in our own country, situation where we don't have freedom of speech to simply state our mind and even tell the truth about what's going on, whereas the opposition to our very heritage in these countries can speak and put out the most vile hatred. We see it every day in the Hollywood movie industry and in the mainstream media, this viciously anti-white propaganda and anti-Western propaganda and anti-Christian propaganda. It's just never ending. It's amazing too that they call these things hate crimes, and they're sponsored, as you said, by the ADL. And to make sure that our people realize, I mean, the ADL, the Anti Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, routinely defends Israel, which is a completely segregated state between Jews and Arabs. They have strict immigration laws. As I said earlier, they have laws where a Jew and a non-Jew can't even legally marry. They steal the land from the Palestinians, and the Palestinians can't even walk on that land. And they support and defend terrorists, such as the former head of Israel, Ariel Sharon, who even an Israeli commission admitted was responsible for the death of over 1,000 Palestinian men, women, and children in massacres. So it's really an amazing scenario, but the control that the Jewish extremists have in the American media has prevented the American people from knowing this, or the people in Canada, or the people in Europe. What do you think we can do to help break this this power? What's your plan of action to wake up the American people and the Canadian people and the people of the world?
Well, we're laboring under a tremendous misunderstanding and even a kind of a superstition about the Jews. I'm talking about the evangelical Christians. There's something like 70 million evangelical Christians in America, and they have a very ill-formed and almost immature, childish notion that if we speak any words against Jews or the evil Jewish leaders who are creating all of this havoc you're talking about, we are cursing them. And God has promised, I will bless them that bless thee and curse thee that curse thee. And a terrible curse will come upon the individual or nation who criticizes Israel. And of course, this is patently unbiblical because all of the great prophets, the Old Testament prophets, including John the Baptist and Jesus, have frequently criticized the Jewish people in their sins and their evil Jewish leaders. And basically what I'm doing is I'm attempting to penetrate the evangelical mindset to show them that they have wandered very far from the true teachings of the Bible. They are not in imitating Jesus Christ or the highest examples of the faith in the Bible. Instead, they are conforming themselves to the expectations of these very Pharisees, this Pharisaic Talmudic system that Jesus railed so bitterly against. Mm-hmm. And also, in order to do this, you see, I've discovered a very powerful way of reaching out to the evangelicals. The evangelicals are very closed-minded to hear any kind of criticisms of matters Jewish or mm-hmm. Israel or whatever. Very deeply propagandized, but what I have been able to do, largely starting in 2004, was when I heard that 11 Christians had been arrested in Philadelphia for the hate crime of witnessing for Jesus Christ in a public square downtown Philadelphia during a huge gay rights parade, I got on the radio, and in many, many radio broadcasts, I was able to dramatize and publicize that to hundreds of thousands of evangelicals in America and throughout the world. And I told them, very frankly, that Lynn Abraham, who is the district attorney of Philadelphia, the one who gave the order to have these 11 Christians arrested, is actually a member of the Anti-Defamation League's National Executive Board. She's also a member of ADL's Justice Lodge. She's a top honcho in the ADL. And I have emphatically repeated this to the evangelicals that here is a Jewish supremacist organization which is really very anti-Christian. They are interested in persecuting Christians. They've taken away free speech in Canada. They intend to do it in the United States. And even though I haven't been able to transform the evangelicals in their view of Israel, I have been able to jumpstart real concern and activism against hate crimes legislation. Mm-hmm. And my videos have been seen by tens of thousands of evangelicals. But what this hate crimes issue does is it gradually brings new light and truth to the evangelicals. It shows them that even though they passionately love the Jews and their Jewish leaders in the state of Israel, they are not loved in return. These very people that they are lavishing unconditional support upon and blessing are in fact working behind the scenes to undermine Christian civilization and actually work to imprison, to persecute them. And mm-hmm. they've been doing it in Canada. I tell these Christians mm-hmm. that just look through the telescope up to Canada and you'll see exactly where the United States will be in several years
where we're headed,
if
yes.
the hate laws are passed.
You know that it's really important. There are many thousands of new people and people just coming to my website and also the YouTube broadcast that we do here at davidduke.com. And it's really important for those new people to understand when we oppose hate crime legislation, it doesn't mean that we propose or support hatred. What we believe in, and I know what you believe in and what I believe in, is the exact opposite of hatred. We're not hateful people in any way. We don't want to see people full of hate. In fact, we understand the hate of our enemies and the intolerance of our enemies. Our enemies want to repress any opinion that they don't agree with. We believe in freedom of speech, and they don't. And they have a tremendous hatred for our heritage, for our faith, for our values. And I also want to say that we have many thousands of people listening all over America, all over Europe, and among Europeans and among non-Europeans, for that matter, who are both Christians and non-Christians. But I hope also the non-Christians who listen, the potential Christians who listen, I hope they understand that the great bulk of the European people are still, at least ostensibly, Christian. And it's so vital that we reach our Christian brothers and sisters with the truth. And one of the most fundamental issues, and I'd like you to comment upon this, because you actually have a lot deeper understanding than I do. I know that you've read Jewish Supremacism and My Awakening and my take on these things. But it's really amazing to me and shocking to me, as I'm not a member of the clergy, and I'm not the kind of person that you are inside of the Christian faith or organizations. I'm shocked that so many evangelicals could be sold the idea that the Jews are still the, quote, chosen people of God, when the New Testament was about a new covenant with the idea that those who accepted Jesus Christ became then the favorite of God, that the elect, as it said in the New Testament. And this the idea that people who reject Jesus Christ, and the Talmud, as you know, condemns Jesus Christ, that the idea that they are the chosen of God and that they have a special relationship with God and they are beyond any sort of criticism, it's just amazing to me that Christians could swallow this. This is relatively a new phenomenon, isn't it, Ted? I mean, 20, 30 years ago, the average evangelical didn't believe this malarkey. Could you comment on some of these principles and issues?
Well, I think this idea that God has an unconditional covenant, both a land covenant and a spiritual covenant of blessing to the Jews, has been around pretty strongly, I'd say, for about a century, because Zionism was supported from its beginnings at the turn of the previous century by many evangelicals, fundamentalist Christians in America. But you see, what has happened is that Christians, evangelical Christians, have been listening much more acutely to what the Zionists and even the ADL educational programs to them tell them, rather than what the Bible really says. Now, the Bible, in my perspective, states that God, in fact, Jesus Christ, behind the scenes, Jesus is God, called the Hebrew people from the beginnings to chart the way, to create a path through terrible darkness and idolatry and infanticide and perversions and so on, which filled the Middle East 3,500 years ago. He called Abraham, he called Isaac and Jacob in order to create a way that the truth, that Jesus Christ might come down and bring, as you say, salvation not only to the Jews, but to all, through the power of his cross and his shed blood. And what the scriptures repeatedly say throughout the Old Testament is that if the Hebrews will obey God's laws, the Ten Commandments and the teachings of the prophets and so on, God will bless them, and God would have allowed them to stay in their land as long as they exercised righteousness and judgment and mercy, even toward the strangers in the land. God would have blessed them and prospered them. And in fact, Moses is given alternatives by God of great blessings or versus great curses that would come upon the Jewish people if they rebelled. Well, the long and short of it was that this nation, Israel, which was chosen by God as his unique bride among the nations, became a spiritual prostitute. She committed spiritual harlotry and whoredoms. And in no less than 82 specific verses in the Old Testament, the prophets railed against Israel, ancient Israel, and Judah as a spiritual whore, the first to have spiritual relations with God and the first to prostitute it. And so when Jesus finally came down to earth 2,000 years ago, he found that these evil Pharisees, this whorish Babylonian system, had migrated back from the Babylonian captivity of Nebuchadnezzar. The Pharisees started in Babylon, and they came back to Palestine, and they turned, made the law of God of none effect, substituting the Mishnah, the oral traditions of the Pharisees, the Talmudic teachings for the pure and simple precepts of God's law. And then what happened was, of course, that they codified all this into the great Babylonian Talmud, which is full of Antichrist ambitions. The Zohar or Kabbalah is a revolutionary manifesto to overthrow Christian civilization in order that a false Messiah to take the place of Jesus would just someday be established on the earth on the ashes of Christian civilization. Now, St. Paul is very clear in Romans 9 through 11 that unbelieving Jews who reject Jesus Christ, who do not walk in the precepts even of Moses, they are the broken off branches. They are cast away. They have no territorial claims to Palestine. They have no spiritual claims to being the apple of God's eye and even of God's chosen people. They have nothing. What we're seeing in the Middle East today is a total fabrication, a total counterfeit of a return, which I believe the scriptures also prophesy will occur at Christ's second coming, when a small remnant of Jews out of the confabulation and the destruction of this great Zionist world system in great tribulation, great persecution, when Jesus comes, it says they'll look upon him whom their fathers pierced, and they will mourn, and they will humiliate themselves in abject humility before Jesus Christ as he comes to judge the nation, which has arisen victims of generations away from the light of the gospel in Jesus Christ. That is why they have gone so massively as well as darkness, because they have received tremendous light. And so coming to the conclusion that something's losing people would turn on the illegal persecutions of them, something massively wrong here. And fortunately, I believe in God's timing, the truth tellers, that our message is coming on the scene and saying, this is all prophesied in Scripture, great deception, great falling away, but there is the divine purpose and prophecy. Meanwhile, the message of Revelation, come out of her, my people, come out of my people, out of them. And God has remembered her. And lots of evangelicals, not a majority, but a small and thinking minority of evangelicals are starting to listen to this message.
Well, you know, they often use in support of Israel, they say, of course, it as you said, covenant. It said, as long as you keep the word of God, and if you don't, if you reject God, and you reject his, God will requite you instantly. So
you're not, God, nobody who rejects, much less crucifies Jesus Christ, will make any claim to being God's chosen people. The works of faith and obedience and mercy that Abraham. And when we do the works of the great saints of the Old Testament, the Hebrew and Jewish patriarchs, the Old Testament, the person of Jewish speaking, God's chosen people, broken off. Paul makes that very clear. And when all those branches have been broken off, it makes them white, you know, like in the rainforest, the tree falls. And then these fresh green branches of the Gentiles were grafted in, he says. But the whole purpose of God's plan of the ages is to bring both Gentiles and Jews into sonship, into the family of God through faith and obedience.
You know, there's I've never talked to you about this yet, but there's an excellent and very interesting book by perhaps one of the leading authorities in the Talmud in American academia. I think he's a professor at Princeton University. His name is Dr. Peter Schaefer.
Yes.
And he recently came out with a book called Jesus in the Talmud. And one of the quotes from that book, and this is, I can quote it directly, it says, what exactly is so scandalous? How about Jesus punished in hell for eternity by being made to sit in a cauldron of boiling excrement? That image appears in early manuscripts of the Babylonian Talmud, as does a brief account of Jesus' trial and execution, not by Romans, but by the Jewish high court, the Sanhedrin. So here's one of the biggest scholars in the Talmud. No one considered anti-Semitic. He's got many forewords, in fact, in this book by Jewish scholars. And he talks about the fact that the Jewish halakha, the Jewish law, the main Jewish scripture, which is really the Talmud, basically utters the most vile and hateful attack against Jesus Christ.
Yes. You know, it's very significant to me that when Jesus came on the scene, he went after the Pharisees with a almost a vitriolic vengeance, a fiery rage and rebuke that is unparalleled in the literature of man. Chapter after chapter, he goes after these Pharisees, itemizing all of their sins and perversions and hypocrisies. You see, being the second member of the Trinity, Jesus being God, knew exactly what Pharisaism was going to bring forth in the earth. He knew that they were a quintessentially antichrist system, opposed to him in every possible way. They were murderous. In fact, he said they were guilty of all the blood shed all the way back to Cain slaying Abel in the Garden of Eden, for the simple fact that if they had been on the scene, they would have done the same thing that Cain did in shedding the righteous blood. Mm-hmm. And so Jesus was no high-minded, ethical teacher like Buddha, Confucius, or Muhammad, whatever. He knew the end from the beginning, and he knew that there was something terribly monstrous and evil hatching itself out of Babylon and then in Judea in his time, which would go throughout the world, corrupting the nations and doing everything it possibly could to literally end his the church and his mission on earth. And the book of Acts describes how Saul of Tarsus, who was a dedicated Pharisee, went out and brought in the people and had them killed and imprisoned and so on. The Pharisees did their very best in the first 64 or so years of the church's existence to destroy it. And after this destruction of Jerusalem and then the later Bar Kochba defeat, a century later, the Jews were thoroughly expelled to the nations, and they weren't able to continue their agenda for destroying Christianity. But tragically now, we see Jewish activism ascending to such power over the media, over government, even over war-making potential of America in the Middle East. We see such potential now here, you see, that through the hate crimes laws especially, bias crime and hate crimes legislation, they are realizing that they're in a position now to reinstate a program of persecution and hopefully extirpating Christianity that was begun in the first century.
Right, and Ted, you know, this wasn't, of course, just the first 60 years of Christianity. I mean, they've been working against it ever since. I mean, look at the Jewish-dominated Hollywood. Now it seems like they've got a new tack. At one hand, they destroy Christianity among certain segments of our population. On the other hand, they subvert it. And they've used Christianity now in some ways, in some sectors anyway, of the evangelical Christianity, unfortunately, to actually support anti-Christian Israel and basically bolster and defend the Jewish power, which is destroying the fundamental values and the fundamental aspects of a Christian morality in the United States of America and in Europe. It's pretty ironic, this whole position, and it's catastrophic what's going on when we have Christians supporting the biggest enemies of Jesus Christ and Christianity, as well as the enemies of all of Western mankind. Another issue that is very important to so many Christians today, and so many non-Christians for that matter, all Europeans, there's a great deal of concern, obviously, about radical Islam. And certainly Christians don't want to see Europe become overwhelmingly a Muslim country, nor do we want to see that in the United States. We certainly want to preserve our own Christian heritage, our own cultural and ethnic heritage, like all people on earth really do. It's a natural thing. But it's interesting that people now, we hear so much about radical Islam and about how Islam is so anti-Christian, and it's true that it doesn't really represent the same, it's certainly not Christian in any way, and we could call it anti-Christian in many ways. But at the same time, the Quran actually defends Jesus Christ and defends Mary against the attacks of the Talmud and the Jewish extremists. And talks about the lies told by the Jews against Jesus, and of course the Islamic people hold Jesus very high. Isn't it also ironic that they've got so many Christians now uttering tremendous hatred against Islam, while at the same time who actually defend in many ways Jesus Christ, while at the same time lauding Jews who and Jewish extremists who hate Jesus and hate Christianity and hate the West. In fact, there wouldn't be. I think we could live in coexistence with Islam in the world, in their part of the world and us in ours. We wouldn't have a problem with Islamic immigration or any of this massive immigration into the West, except for the fact of the Jewish domination of our media. So isn't it ironic that we have this evangelicals now, you know, attacking Islam at the same time defending Jewish extremists, I should say, who are really far more anti-Jesus than anything that the Islamic people represent.
Well, you know, back during the Middle Ages, the Jews and the Muslims got along great, both anti-Christian. The Jews were traitors. They were very familiar with the Muslim world. Many of them were actually even helped the Muslims in their forays against the Christians, became scouts for the Muslim armies, and so on. And but by the turn of the 19th century, when we entered the period of Zionist penetration of Palestine, what we see there is we see a Muslim world in the Middle East very much at peace with the West. The people of Arabia, Iraq, Palestine, and so on had great admiration for the British, the French, the Americans, Germans, and so on. And they were actually more angry at their Ottoman Turk rulers than they certainly were at the West. But it's very, very significant that almost to the year or the month or the day that the Zionists began to penetrate into Palestine, the temperature started rising in the animosity of the Arabs to the Jews. And, of course, this arose to a tremendous level of resentment when something like 800,000 Palestinian people of Israel, the Christians and Muslims, were driven by sheer terror and atrocities, driven to flee out of Palestine just before the State of Israel in 1948. Mm-hmm. But there's a very, very definable worsening and souring in relationship between, especially between the Jews and the Arabs, and the Arabs just last 30, 20 years can be very back to the spiritual, because that the Jews and the Hebrews, he said, if you dwell at peace among the nations, you know, he told this to Jeremiah as the Jews were being exiled in 597 BC to Babylon because of their sins. He said, when you go into the nations of the dispersion, live at peace with them, seek the peace and welfare mm-hmm. of those mm-hmm. nations in which you dwell, and you will have peace. But the advice mm-hmm. of the Pharisees and the Talmud and the Zohar and so on was exactly the opposite. It said, no, we're never going to take over the Goyim. We're never going to assume world control and put down Christianity unless we cause unrest and instability and problems and wars and corruption and depravity among the nations, breaking down Christian civilization. And so here we have a defiance of God's law by the Jewish leaders leading
right.
the people astray.
Right. You know, I was in. Pardon me, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was in Syria, a couple of years ago, and I was kind of surprised. I knew about it, but I didn't really fully understand it and fully grasp the situation. And I came to Syria. I met with many Christian leaders in Syria, in Damascus, and I found out they have a very vibrant, 2 million strong Christian community there. And they've had their battles and their conflicts with the Muslims over the years, but they're very vibrant and good, and they actually quite respect each other, and they're all universal in their opposition to Israel. And we have a situation
Lebanon.
Well, I'm talking about Syria and Damascus.
Yeah.
And yes, the Lebanon too. And of course, with the war and with what's gone on with the Palestinians. Upwards of around 40% of the Palestinian people, when Israel was founded, were in fact Christians, and and because of the fact that some of the evangelical community supported Israel, and the Christian world in many ways supported Israel, that's caused tremendous difficulty for the Christians in both Lebanon, in in the Middle East and Israel proper, of course, in the West Bank. And Christianity now is dying in these areas. And yes. Again, it's so ironic, so tragic to think that we have evangelical Christians who have supported anti-Christian Jewish extremists in bombing and burning and killing yes. and torturing and stealing the land of Palestinian Christians by the hundreds of thousands.
Yes. Well, it's the thing that rends my heart is that here we have several billion Muslims, Arabs and Muslims, who have been prejudiced against the simple and benign redemptive message of Jesus Christ because mm-hmm. Christianity has become linked together with Islam. And you think not only Christianity, but the United States of America has become linked together with the injustices of Zionism. And Christ sent forth his apostles to preach the good news of salvation to the whole world, to the Jew, to the Gentile, to the Arab world, to the Jewish world, to the on and on, without making distinctions. And here, Christian evangelism has been blighted in the Arab world because the Christians have taken a no-compromise position of unconditional support and blessing of Israel, even in her very greatest injustices. You mentioned a little earlier that Ariel Sharon killed 1,000 in his latest foray in the West Bank. Well, the truth of the matter is he was responsible for saturation bombing of 20,000 in the 1982 blitz of the refugee camps in southern Lebanon. He was responsible for providing the aerial lighting to the so-called Christian phalangists who killed something like 3,500 in the refugee camps of Shatila and Shabra. And you know, I was on the scene at that time, and I was wondering where in the world are the Christians? Where is Christian morality that it would stand by and be silent with this kind of inhumanity to mankind? And yet the church was in perfect lockstep with Israel and their injustices and said absolutely nothing. From the local pastors to the biggest leaders like Falwell and others, there was absolutely no criticism.
While Christian men, women, and children were being bombed and burned to death yes. and raped and killed and thousands brought into Israeli prisons and tortured with the most unspeakable kinds of treatment,
yes.
Many of the Christian leaders remain silent in America.
Yeah, you know, I have an article up at truthtellers.org. It's probably 6 or 7 months old, but the title of it is Torture in Israeli Prisons. And I did a very thorough study there with extensive footnotes to prove very largely from Jewish sources, Jewish civil rights organizations,
right.
human rights organizations, of the terrible mass persecution and torture, systematic torture of Palestinians who find themselves in Israeli prisons today. I'm talking about today.
Sure.
And the Israeli Supreme Court has generous loopholes for any policeman, any people in the Israeli penal system who want to rationalize that it's in the national interest and have a green light to go ahead. And I have lists there of the most sadistic tortures that are going on in Israel today. But, of course, that doesn't fit the roseate viewpoint of Israel, and it's very, very difficult to get Christians even to read an article like that.
And one last thing before we wrap up this program, and you've been a great guest, and I've been wanting to have a guest to discuss some of these Christian issues for a long time because I know many, many of our listeners are very devout Christians, not only in the United States but around the world, and they need this understanding because they're getting so much misinformation from the mass media. I understand even some of the major Christian bookstore chains and publishers now are being taken over by Jewish extremists. Have you been studying some of that data?
Well, Rupert Murdoch, of course, is Jewish, or at least half Jewish, and he's been buying up some of the biggest Christian publishing houses. And it's astonishing. In fact, there's the largest Christian bookstore here in the Portland, Oregon area. I went into it a while back, and
yeah.
they had a special room in this Christian bookstore for the Jewish Kabbalah and Talmud. They had books there about how to understand Kabbalah. They had books there by Adrian Steinfeld, who's the translator of the New Babylonian Talmud, as well as the biggest authority in the world on Kabbalah. And they had that stuff in there for their Messianic Jewish audience, Messianic Christian and Jewish audience, primarily of so-called Christians who revere the Talmud and Kabbalah. So what we're seeing is a massive penetration, even into not only evangelical minds, but into publishing in the bookstores.
You know, some of the worst Christian so-called evangelists, they're really evangelists for Israel, not for America, like Hagee and others, have said that they believe that the Antichrist, in fact, is Jewish, that he's going to come out of Israel and so forth. But it's good that Israel's there and the Jews are doing this because the Antichrist will rise from them, and then because the Antichrist will rise, then Christ will come back to earth and prophecy will be fulfilled. And every time I hear this thing, I think, this is absolutely insane. It's the most anti-Christian stuff in the world. In other words, we're supposed to support Christ's worst enemies in order for Christ to come back to earth. That makes no sense at all to me. But how do these people weave this kind of insane web? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it is true that Ezekiel 38 and 39 do vividly prophesy a false return to Israel in the last days, in which Israel will dwell in supremacy over the nations. Israel will dwell without need of any military or conventional protections, without bars or gates. Mm-hmm. But the Bible makes it very clear that they are living in such wickedness and perversion that God himself is hiding his face from Israel. So what the Bible talks about is a prophesied counterfeit return, which does precede a final return of a small remnant of believing Jews. And it will be out of that false return that the Antichrist will emerge and rule over the nations, terribly persecuting Christians.
But how can a Christian think, well, I've got to support the enemies of Christ? I mean, it's insane. I've got to support the people. It's crazy. It's just absolutely crazy.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and this is the great, it's not just a paradox or an irony, it's a great tragedy of world history, that the very Church of Jesus Christ, which should be following the example of Jesus, reproving and rebuking this evil Pharisaic system, has actually gotten bed with it. It is building up the walls of the very system, which it will eventually result in the complete desecration and virtual extermination of Christianity from the earth.
Absolutely. Well, Ted, it's really been great having you on. We want to do this again because it's so important. I think your work is so vital. For all of our listeners around the world, it's truthtellers.org. And I've had with me Reverend Ted Pike, an incredible spokesman, a very brave and courageous man, a great scholar, who's exposed not only the nature, the anti-Christian nature of fundamental and Orthodox Judaism, but he's also defended Christian free speech, Christian rights of worship, and really the rights of all of our people to pursue our particular heritage, our values, and continue even our existence on this planet. Every people has a right to live. Our people have a right too. And people often try to define us, and in fact they call it anti-hate. If they want really anti-hate legislation, what they should do is go after the Talmud and these Jewish extremists who are creating so much hatred and war across the world. They had a great role in the First World War. In fact, America came in the First World War with the deal to create Israel itself. That was part of the deal. It was called the Balfour Declaration. This is admitted in major Jewish publications and major historical publications. In the Second World War, they had a great role in fomenting this war, which cost the lives of over 60 million people. We've had terrible bloodshed and wars in the Mideast. They're trying to foment a war right now against Iran. And Iran doesn't want to be the enemy of the United States, and we're producing a catastrophe in the Middle East. And Ted, it really has been a great spokesman there, and we really appreciate your work so much. And I want to say one more thing those listening, you can find many of Ted's books as well and tapes at davidduke.com, and also you can go right to truthtellers.org and support it directly as well. And we have many articles on davidduke.com by Ted Pike. And you just have to go to the search. We have a very good search engine on davidduke.com. Go to that search engine and put in Ted Pike, and you'll find a whole number of fantastic and excellent articles by him. Ted, thanks so much for being with you. It's really an honor to speak to you, and please keep up your good work, and best wishes to the health of your wife.
Well, thank you very much, David.
Thank you, and good evening to you.